Welcome to Local Motion on KVNF. I'm Corey Stanton, and I'm talking with Colorado's Commissioner of Agriculture, Kate Greenberg. Kate, thanks for taking the time to talk with me and KVNF.
Thanks for having me on.
There's a lot going on in the world right now, and there's a lot going on in Colorado. We're talking on August 26th, and Kate, I know you have some updates for Western Slope listeners, and a little later, I've compiled a list of some questions from farmers and producers here in Western Colorado. Kate, why don't you launch into some of your Colorado ag updates?
Well, there is a lot going on, of course, and 2020 has been a strange year, to say the least. Since the start of the pandemic, we at CDA have been focused on supporting all of our folks in agriculture who, you know, have been, of course, critical business since day one. Ag has not shut down, and we were very focused on making sure that as we responded to the pandemic in the early days, that we kept agriculture open for business while also doing everything we could and continue to do to protect every person who works in agriculture up and down the supply chain. So that has been a lot of the last 6 months. Of course, there's all sorts of nuance to that, you know, working with farmers markets on what their operations look like, reimagining fair season for our COVID world right now. And then, of course, the supply chain disruptions. In the very start of the pandemic, I set up a number of internal teams at CDA to respond to whatever might be coming down the pike. We were starting to see those supply chain disruptions early and, of course, incredibly concerned about how that might impact agriculture and our food supply. So we've been responding left and right to issues, trying to resolve them before they become a big deal. And our team has just done incredible work. So that's, you know, I think that's the context of 2020. There's a lot more minutia there. But we're seeing, of course, like every year, a lot of other challenges that producers are facing all over the state. Of course, markets have been tough even before the pandemic, and prices have been bad across the board. And, you know, this year with COVID, we've, of course, seen a lot of pivoting going on in market channels that producers have been getting incredibly entrepreneurial in overhauling their marketing channels overnight. But there's still challenges there, especially with uncertainty with restaurants, for example, for our, you know, more local food system producers. So there's, you know, remains those marketing challenges as well as, you know, just making a living. And then, of course, we're in a pretty serious drought, and our wildfire season is going strong right now. And I don't mean that positively for folks, but we've got, you know, of course, our big fires, the Pine Gulch and Grizzly Creek, burning up in, you know, Junction, Palisade, Glenwood Canyon area. Of course, that's your neck of the woods, and you know best what life is like right now. But smoky ash falling on your heads. We've got folks with livestock up in the high country there. We've been helping move their animals out of harm's way. So, you know, put drought and wildfire on top of global pandemic and supply chain disruption and changing marketing channels overnight. And it's been quite the year for Colorado Ag.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Local Motion on KVNF. I'm Corey Stanton, and I'm talking with Colorado's Commissioner of Agriculture, Kate Greenberg. It is August 26th, and we're doing an agricultural update for Colorado and Western Colorado, specifically for our KVNF listeners. And I took a little poll on Facebook asking other producers and farmers in the Western Slope of Colorado what they would want to ask the Colorado Department of Agriculture. The first question is, what is the future of carbon credits in Colorado ag and local funding incentives for development of regenerative agriculture practice on Colorado farms and ranches?
Great question. Let's see where to start on this one. I think folks probably know by now, if they've heard me speak, that stewardship in its many forms is a priority for me and for the department to support voluntary incentive-based stewardship across Colorado agriculture, regardless of your scale or size or operation type, what you grow or raise. We want to help farmers and ranchers advance their investments in stewardship. And we think about it as soil, water, and climate stewardship. So what we've been doing, and I'll just give a little background and then answer the question about the future. Over the last year, we've helped launch a massive sort of grassroots effort around the state to help us at CDA build a soil health program. We've been running the Soil Health Initiative. It launched the Colorado Collaborative for Healthy Soils, which is separate from the Department of Ag, but advising us, and just actually put together a farmer and rancher advisory board. We wanted to be sure that we're building a program that actually serves farmers and ranchers and not just, you know, sitting in a boardroom in our own heads trying to come up with something brilliant that doesn't actually work on the ground. So we've been getting tons and tons of feedback about what the state can do to really advance the work of farmers and ranchers in building soil health. So that's really our entry point into expanding the department's role and advancing voluntary stewardship. We have a number of irons in the fire that I'm really hopeful will take us to the next level of being able to provide more resources to Colorado producers. From what we've learned and spoken with farmers and ranchers all across the state, kind of really three categories are going to be meaningful, not that they're exhaustive, but at least these three categories for the state to promote. And that's research. So really expanding our research and knowledge base on what soil health means in Colorado and the microclimates around the state. Number two, farmer-to-farmer education, so supporting producers in hosting demonstration plots, field days, really supporting one another in the work they're doing around soil stewardship. And then lastly is grant making. And of course, this is where the dollars come in, and we don't have many dollars in the state budget right now. COVID has, you know, kind of rattled us there, and we're working through that. But that doesn't mean that we can't get creative and find ways to get resources, even if modest, out into the field. So that's what we're doing right now. When it comes to things like carbon credits or, you know, the broader concept of payments for ecosystem services, we are building our soil health program in such a way that will help sort of create the field, the playing field for Colorado producers to be able to engage in those revenue sources. We're not creating those at the state level right now. There's actually a number of other entities, private entities, who are looking at how to develop this. And of course, those programs need to be producer driven, just like our soil health program. But we really want to be pushing that here in Colorado for producers to find additional revenue to support them and their businesses because of their stewardship, not just the yield or the product that they are producing, but also what they're creating in terms of soil health, water conservation, and all the other ecosystem services that ag provides.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Local Motion on KVNF. I'm Corey Stanton, and on this program, I'm talking with Colorado's Commissioner of Agriculture, Kate Greenberg. Our next question is about climate change and what's going on in this mega drought that we're experiencing. Aridification, climate change, heat, wind, and smaller snowpacks. What does this new reality mean for agriculture in the West? And does the Colorado Department of Agriculture have a vision for these issues and how to help producers with these impacts?
Yeah, another big question. I really appreciate the thoughtfulness of these questions. This does tie back into what, you know, what I was just talking about regarding soil health, payment for ecosystem services. So, of course, those items are not exhaustive of what we need to do to be able to respond to climate change, help mitigate climate change where we can, and then, of course, adapt. Right now, I'm actually getting out all around the state. Was just up in Junction, Palisade area, down in the San Luis Valley now, and headed to the southeast as part of a statewide drought tour. The governor activated the drought task force earlier this summer. I co-chair the Ag Impact Task Force to really understand what's going on in agriculture from the drought, and then also make sure that we can help producers get the resources they need because of the drought. But part of, you know, what we're hearing all over the state, of course, is that we've had more intense droughts more frequently. We've had sustained high temps, incredibly high temps all around the state. Of course, really intense wildfire. And then our water picture, sort of our whole picture, our snowpack, melts, groundwater, our compact obligations are all putting incredible pressure, not to mention population growth, on our water supply. So a lot of compounding factors that are massive. They're massive problems. And we recognize that at CDA. So our soil health initiative is one component of how we're addressing this. We're also getting more involved than we have historically on issues like the Colorado Water Plan and issues of water quantity that are so important to agriculture. You know, as we revamp, as we kind of make the next update to the water plan, there are so many questions about, well, how do we serve all the needs in Colorado and our neighboring states that rely on us, given a tighter water future? And in there is the question of, well, what's the future of agriculture when it comes to water? And that's a role that, you know, not just CDA, the Department of Ag, but all of us really need to be considering as we look at a future of hotter, drier times, more frequent drought, more frequent disruptions. Where do we want agriculture in our lives? Really, it's a question for consumers too, for voters, in my mind. And that's so much of a part of what I'm doing now is just really, I think, integrating and firming up the incredible importance of rural Colorado and of agriculture in Colorado to building resilience for the state as a whole as we move into the future. And agriculture is a driving force of that resilience, and we need to make sure we are setting ourselves up as a state to support the people who are doing the work to grow that resilience in the face of hotter and drier times.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit more about the Colorado Water Plan? And is this something that producers could weigh in on? Are there any kind of stakeholder groups for this? I know you have a very boots on the ground approach, which I appreciate so much because you really, you know what you're doing. You know what you're talking about. You're talking directly with the farmers. Is there any way for our Western Slope producers to get involved or send feedback to this next Colorado Water Plan?
Yes, that's a great question because it's a critical time to get involved. And I mean, I know folks are so busy and there's never enough time to even do what you need to do on the farm. And I, you know, spent my previous life pestering producers to show up in volunteer capacities all the time because that's where big decisions get made. And it's often at, you know, it's at these meetings. And for the water plan, it's really through the basin roundtables. Every basin in the state of Colorado has a basin roundtable that's made up of local water folks in the community. You know, it's conservation districts, it's conservancy districts. You know, there's seats for different sectors, for environmental sector, for ag, for municipal. And the basin roundtables really develop sort of the local vision for the future of water in that basin, and that gets filtered up to the state. And then, of course, the state through the Colorado Water Conservation Board, which is known as the CWCB, is the entity in charge of rewriting the water plan. So as we move forward, this is a huge opportunity for folks, you know, on the Western Slope to go to those basin roundtables or submit comments directly to CWCB about what kind of future you want to see. And the state is very responsive to those comments and input, especially from the roundtables and the basin implementation plans. It's a window of opportunity to get in what we want as agriculture into a plan that's going to help shape policy and funding into the future.
It's nice to know that voices will be heard and that they're responsive to comments and questions from the local producers. And so is that per county or possibly not, because a basin could really serve a whole area?
Yes, it's not by county. So Western Slope, there's the Colorado Basin Roundtable, the Gunnison Basin Roundtable. In my neck of the woods, we have the Southwest Basin Roundtable. You know, what we did, as I used to go to Southwest a lot, we'd rotate meetings. Every other meeting was Durango and Cortez. And I think a lot of roundtables try and do that because they do span a pretty vast, you know, region, try and cut down on driving time. And now, of course, there's virtual options to engage, which is great if you're hours away from where the meeting's taking place. So hopefully it's even easier to engage now. And those are public meetings. There are folks who are members of the board, but the public is invited to attend, and there's time for public comment as well. So definitely wherever you are on the Western Slope, just go to the CWCB website. You can go to the drop-down tab that talks about the basin roundtables, and then you can just find your local basin roundtable. You can see who's on it. You can look at meeting minutes and look at when the next meeting is and attend if you're able.
For more information on the Colorado Water Plan and to find water basin roundtables, you can visit cwcb.colorado.gov. You're listening to Local Motion on KVNF. I'm Corey Stanton, and I spoke with Colorado's Commissioner of Agriculture, Kate Greenberg, on August 26th. To get a broader reach here on the Western Slope, I posted on Facebook asking what local producers, farmers, and ranchers wanted to know from the Colorado Department of Agriculture. We talked a little bit about one of your focus points being on funding or grants. And one of our other questions that came from a Western Slope listener is, any grant funding and other funds available for young and landless farmers?
Yes, this is a huge issue. And actually, I'm out on a ranch right now, incredible pair of ranchers who helped found an apprenticeship program many years ago called the New Agrarian Program through an organization called the Kavira Coalition. It's based out of Santa Fe, but supports apprenticeships all around the West. George and Julie down here have actually helped us as a state create a new program. Actually, last year was the first year we were giving out grant money, and it's called the Ag Workforce Development Program. It's run through the Department of Ag. It provides a 50-50 cost share with landowners to support typically landless young people who are looking to start or, you know, at least explore a career in agriculture. And those apprenticeships, well, we help the cost share for 6 months, and it's up to $5,000 for an apprentice. So that's really about accessing a mentor network. It's about finding access to a business where you can gain experience. That does not help people access land. That is a huge issue, of course, and something I worked on for many, many years with the National Young Farmers Coalition, and we know it's one of the biggest barriers to young people getting started in agriculture. We do not at CDA have all of the resources that we would like, of course, to help make that land access issue less of an issue. But there are sort of different pieces at the state level that folks can lean on, as well as outside of state government. So at CDA, I would say two main ones to look at: Ag Workforce Development Program. If you're looking to get experience, work with a producer you're interested in getting mentored by to apply for those grants. We also are affiliated with a board called CADA, Colorado Ag Development Authority. They actually operate a beginning farmer loan program. I don't think many people know about it, but that's state-run, really competitive rates, and definitely something to check out. Of course, you know, put that next to what FSA offers and see what's right for you. But the state does have a loan program specifically for beginning farmers. And then there's a lot of land access work going on through GOCO, which is also state funded through the lottery, though not under CDA. And then GOCO works with a lot of the local land trusts around the state that are focused on ag land protection. And, you know, a lot of them are starting to think more about how do you actually connect young people who don't have access to land with land that's protected for agriculture. So that's some of the resources out there, but, you know, a lot more to go in terms of how we actually tackle the problem as a whole.
Mm-hmm. So if farmers or young farmers or any farmers, I guess, are interested in one of these mentorships, they should visit the Colorado Department of Agriculture's website.
Yep, that's right. We will have applications rolling out this fall. And so the information will be on our website. You can read about the program there. You can always give our team a call to find out more. And if, you know, that's true if you're an apprentice looking for experience on a farm. It's also true if you are a farmer or rancher looking to bring on an apprentice. Of course, this is to help get some extra labor on the farm, but really the point of it is education. So we're looking for folks who are committed to helping train and bring up, you know, the next generation of farmers and ranchers.
Awesome, which I know has been one of the main focuses in your entire career. From what I know of you and what I've read, you've been very dedicated to helping young people get into agriculture successfully. What is it that inspires you the most to get young people involved in farming and agriculture?
Well, at one point in time, I was a younger person trying to get involved in agriculture. I didn't come from a farm family, wasn't raised in agriculture, though certainly raised around farmers and ranchers. And I was watching folks like me around me who were trying to get into the business and launch their own business, start their own farm, and how hard it was to do that through, you know, for so many reasons. I think seeing the barriers firsthand and also seeing the passion and how if we don't figure out a way to remove those barriers, we're going to miss out on a generation that's filled with passion for the land, for food, for agriculture, for taking care of natural resources, for feeding our communities. And the implications of that are huge. I mean, you know, I'm out on a ranch right now that's 126 years in the same family. We've, of course, got farms and ranches that have been many hundreds of years passed down here in Colorado with our Hispanic and Native communities. What it takes to do that, to actually, you know, transfer land and business throughout the generations is just an incredible amount of work. And I think without actually addressing the barriers that are keeping, you know, current generations of young people from building careers in agriculture. I mean, the land prices, especially irrigated land prices in Colorado, debt such as student loan debt, access to capital and credit, you know, all of the barriers that stand in young people's way, we risk losing that succession that is so hard to keep in any generation, but the pressures now are really immense. And so that's continued to be a priority at the department, you know, in my role here at Department of Ag, because it's so critical to both our multi-generation families, to what the landscape looks like, what the economy looks like in Colorado, and then to those, you know, first generation or new entry farmers and ranchers who are committed to a life in agriculture and just face these pretty steep barriers to entry.
You've been Colorado's Commissioner of Agriculture for the past year and a half. It sounds like you have a lot of different programs going on, which is awesome and super supportive of our ag communities. I'm curious, what's been the most rewarding part of this position for you so far?
Oh, that's a great question. It's been an incredible honor to be in this position. It's been just over a year and a half, and in some ways it's gone by in a blink of an eye, and in other ways it's felt like many more years, right? Especially with a global pandemic kind of packed in the middle there. But I think really what's such an honor in this role is getting to be a part of so many people's lives in Colorado. The Department of Ag is, you know, and I kind of felt this going in because I was working on the other side with the department, you know, helping create the Ag Workforce Development Program. And now I'm on, you know, this side, on the department side. And I think what's really sets us apart as an agency in a lot of ways is how we and our team is, you know, we're part of the agricultural community. We're not sort of just sitting in Denver trying to regulate folks, right? We're partners, we're allies. A lot of our staff are farmers and ranchers or come from ag families. We've got a team of 300 people that's incredibly committed to agriculture. So that means that, yes, we are a regulatory agency. We are obligated by statute to regulate certain aspects of the ag industry, and that's an important part of our role. But we also are a service agency. We provide resources, technical assistance. We've got people, you know, real life people on the other end of the phone who are here to troubleshoot and help folks work through the problems they're facing. The food safety work we do, or our organic certification, or fruit and vegetable inspections, phytosanitary inspections. I mean, those are all, you know, people, our team working with folks in the field to help strengthen ag businesses in Colorado and help strengthen Colorado ag as a whole. And it's a real honor to be able to be not just, you know, at the helm of an agency that leans so much on those personal relationships out in the field, but also to be building those relationships, to know what people are living and facing in real life, you know, not just on paper, but out, you know, like I'm looking across the Sangre de Cristos right now, and what life is like down in the valley for folks who are living and doing the work is so incredibly meaningful in this role. So, you know, I think that plus the ability with the however long I have the opportunity to be in this position to try and move the needle on some things that hopefully will make a difference for farmers and ranchers and everyone who works in agriculture in the state, even, you know, if it's modest, or it hopefully sets us on a good path to be more resilient, more vibrant, more economically solvent over time, and to make sure that ag has a long and vibrant future in Colorado.
Great. If you could share with our listeners, what's going on with the hemp industry in 2020?
Well, great question. 2020 is looking a little bit different than 2019, because I think, you know, this industry, the hemp industry, is so nascent, so young, is still figuring itself out in a lot of ways. 2018 Farm Bill, of course, legalized hemp across the country. Colorado, we'd had our own program for about 5 years. We're ahead of the curve. But in 2019, now everyone could start getting into the business. And we saw just about everyone who wanted to getting into the business one way or another. We also saw that boom cycle bust last year in 2019. Prices plummeted. Folks got out of business a few months after they got in. Of course, a lot of the producers who had been growing, whether hemp or other products before 2018 Farm Bill, you know, I saw folks go in more cautiously, wanting to see, you know, how is this going to play out? Can I trust these buyers? Of course, there's a lot of hemp products still sitting in barns and sheds around the state that didn't find a market. This year, you know, we've seen a drop off in registered acres, though we still are, you know, a leading state in the nation for production. But really, I think what I'm excited about, what I hope we see more of, and certainly what we're trying to push at the Department of Ag, is, you know, a number of things. A more certain regulatory environment. Of course, we're in a bit of limbo right now, working back and forth with the USDA and their interim final rule. And we want to see greater diversity in market channels for Colorado producers, you know, especially looking beyond oil and looking at fiber markets, for example, and how can we help build those marketplaces to be a sound place for producers to sell their products. And then really looking at stewardship as well. You know, I think we got a lot of folks last year who had never been in ag, and that was exciting. And we hope they still have a place in their hearts for ag if they're not in the business anymore. But there's also a risk with a new kind of exciting crop that we're not going to have our stewardship values be part of the industry. So we're really trying to push that, you know, we've got a huge opportunity to weave in soil, water, climate stewardship into hemp and help producers gain a premium on a product that was produced with these stewardship values with an end buyer, a consumer who's paying for stewardship. And I think we're seeing that in the fiber market with more of the, you know, kind of sustainable supply chain and actually a lot of the market demand driving the supply chain back down to the farm field, and hemp has that opportunity. So that's really where we're putting our sights right now, and we'll see what comes.
It's exciting to hear that Colorado's interested in pursuing some more industrial uses of hemp. In 2018, the CDA had 35,000 acres registered through the Industrial Hemp Program, 89,000 registered acres in 2019. Do you know the total for 2020?
I don't know the exact total off the top of my head, but we are below 50% registered acres. And we don't know harvested acres yet, but yeah, it's been a big drop. But again, I think, you know, that's the system, the industry just kind of learning, going through its growing pains.
Right. Well, let's talk about some other growing pains. You've mentioned earlier that we are in fire season, and I was just curious if you're foreseeing any kind of huge ag impacts from the current fires here in Colorado, and if there's any kind of wildfire relief programs and any projected impacts of these massive fires.
I mean, the impacts from wildfires are never just the immediate impacts. They, of course, as we talked about earlier, the immediate impacts are serious. You know, it's getting livestock out of harm's way. It's supporting our livestock producers and helping move their cattle to a safe place. It's the impact on forage on those grazing lands that are burning right now, which are all public lands currently, at least with our big fires. So those are the immediate impacts, but there are a lot of secondary impacts that can last for quite some time. I mean, of course, a lot of the fires in Colorado happen in headwaters in the high country, especially on the western slope, obviously. That has impacts to watersheds, which can reduce the water holding capacity up high. When we have dried out soil, when we get spring melt, we get less surface water runoff because a lot of that melt is actually going underground to replenish that soil moisture. We actually saw that this year too with a decent snowpack and a rapid melt that a lot of it actually went to replenish that soil moisture and groundwater rather than surface supplies. Of course, the risk of the burn scars flashing is always, or you know, mudslides, rock slides, erosion of some kind is always a worry with these wildfires. That can impact, again, water supply. It can impact infrastructure. If those mudslides wipe out ditches or irrigation supplies or irrigation infrastructure, rather. So, you know, that's ongoing impact. It's multi-year impact. We adapt really well to that because I think, you know, fire season is a part of living in Colorado. And we'll see how these two fires play out specifically with their given geography and kind of what the landscape and infrastructure is like in these regions. But of course, for permittees out on the grazing lands, it has a longer term impact as well.
And what about any kind of relief? Or I guess it's right now the fires are mostly on public land. If a farmer's property was to be damaged in one of these wildfires, are there resources for those farmers, ranchers?
You know, I think insurance is typically what would cover this, you know, assuming folks have insurance that covers wildfire damage. There are a lot of resources out there for drought in particular, for structures that are burned by wildfire. I mean, I think, you know, that probably does depend mainly on insurance coverage, I would imagine, for on the private land side.
Okay. And are you still splitting time between the Front Range and Durango?
I am when I can. The pandemic has kept me living room bound for, you know, dealing with a lot of it. But now I'm getting all around the state and home to Durango, you know, whenever I can.
Well, Kate, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me and KVNF and for sharing some really important information and updates on Colorado agriculture.
Yeah, thanks so much. My pleasure.
You've been listening to Local Motion on KVNF. I'm Corey Stanton. Be sure to visit kvnf.org for more Local Motion programs and for direct links to many of the resources mentioned in this program. Thank you for listening.